Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 9th day of October, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and no two ways about it. The news has gone so far beyond bizarre anymore that stories we now consider to be, basically boring and not particularly newsworthy would have been off the charts unbelievable not too long before the COVID-1984 plandemic conditioned everybody to, oh no, they really would do that. So let's start off our recap, more or less chronologically, with a potpourri of stories from the good, the bad, to, yes, the ugly. To Facebook and all of its little socialist companion apps were down for users around the world for more than 5 hours on Monday in what's being called a catastrophic outage by the breathless Daily Mail that's been understood, they claim, to have been caused by a server update gone bad. In horror of horrors, the Zuckerberg puppetmeister was said to have lost over $7 billion in fiat bucks as shares of the globalist censorship titan tanked, at least temporarily. No word in the story about whether some senators were briefly worried about missing out on their next bribe, so I guess we can stick this story in whichever category you feel like. But not to worry, by 2200 Eastern Time, Zero Hedge was reporting that To Facebook was back online. Yes, they're alive! And the company is actively working to fully return to normal censorship levels. I'm sorry, regular operations. Their engineering team, they said, has learned that configuration changes on the backbone routers that coordinate all kinds of network traffic were to blame. And don't worry your pretty little heads about it, said a later report. There is no malicious activity behind yesterday's event.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along.
This was certainly not a beta test for things that are coming later. This, however, almost certainly was, and perhaps is a prelude to World War III to boot. The U.S. has warned China. You ever seen a puppet warn its puppeteer, folks, to cease their coercion after sending a record 52 aircraft, literally wave after wave, into Taiwanese airspace in its largest mission ever, at least so far? Beijing has hit back and told its Biden puppet to stop supporting separatist forces, and thus speaks the Daily Mail coverage, noting that Washington and Beijing stepped up their verbal attacks. Playing good cop and bad cop, I guess, on Monday over Taiwan, as the U.S. accused China of provocative military activity near the island. And 36 fighter jets flew into Taiwan's airspace, accompanied by 12 H-6 nuclear-capable bombers, 2 Y-8 anti-submarine warfare aircraft, and 2 KJ-500 early warning control planes, marking the largest single incursion by Chinese air forces since at least last year. But it comes after a weekend, during which China flew a total of 93 aircraft close to the island in 5 separate missions, the largest of which then comprised 25 planes. And gee, folks, doesn't that kind of make it look like they're trying to get people used to this? Says the Daily Mail story, the sorties have rattled, probably as intended, Taiwan's leaders, one of whom, Foreign Minister Joseph Wu, said in an interview with the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, we're very concerned that China's going to launch a war against Taiwan at some point, although he said perhaps the threat may not be imminent at this point. But China's state media also fanned the flames of fear with chilling new threats, asking whether or not Australia, quote, is willing to accompany Taiwan to become cannon fodder. All of which has prompted more than a few cynics to ask the question about whether the fake Biden regime is providing their fake enemy, the Communist Chinese Party, with precisely what they're looking for. In other words, an excuse to take that first strike. And what do you bet that China may return the favor to the traitorous Marxist Millie, but the American people, on the other hand, won't hear a peep out of the D.C. swamp until it's way too late. And here's a story about which the only thing that's actually surprising is that the left stream is finally admitting it. Although it is the Epoch Times that's actually making a big deal about it. Vermont, they say, the state with the highest so-called vaccination rate, i.e. the Zyklon B poison poke, in the United States, is experiencing a major surge of the Communist Chinese Party virus at levels not seen since the peak of the pandemic last year. The number of cases, and nobody really knows exactly what that means, of course, is at a record level. Hospitalizations, though, are close to the records notched last winter, and the state recorded its deadliest day and second deadliest month of the entire pandemic during September. This is not supposed to happen, says the headline, as if anybody really still believes that, said the commissar of the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, which monitors statistics of the Booga Booga flu for the almighty state there. Quote, I think it's clearly frustrating for all of us. Because get this, folks, more than 69% of all of Vermont's population has taken the hairy carry plunge and been fully vaccinated, yeah, sure, and turned themselves into little petri dish bioreactors to make the spike protein that breaches a record set on January 31st last year. And more cases, they're admitting to 40% at this point of COVID-1984 in Vermont were among the vaccinated people. And remember, folks, they fudge the numbers on that and, of course, lie about how long you have to wait before you can be fully vaccinated. So if you die in that first 2 weeks, they don't count it anyway. These statistics, take them with a grain of salt anyway, are according to a letter signed by 90 employees of the Vermont Health Department, including state epidemiologist Patsy Kelso. And this is almost funny. As he lifted the state of emergency in Vermont in June, when 80% of the population had taken the poison poke, Governor Phil Scott then said, we can't be in a perpetual state of emergency, indicating he's weary of reimposing it. But hey, wasn't that the point all along? How can you reimpose it if you never let it lapse to begin with? And all of the four states which follow Vermont, says the story, in terms of the highest percentage of people stupid enough to take the poke in the nation, are also experiencing alarming signs. Who could have thought it? The head of the largest health system, SICK, in central Massachusetts, UMass Memorial Health, recently said that regional hospitals were seeing nearly 20 times more COVID-1984 patients than in June, and there isn't an ICU bed to spare. They're at number 5 on the most poked list. Connecticut, number 2 on that same list, recently extended their dictator's emergency powers, Achtung, to make it easier to cope with the latest wave of the pandemic. In other words, it's really bad, but it's not as bad as we want, so let's tighten the screws some more. And back in late September, the third most poison-poked U.S. state, Maine, had nearly 90 people in intensive care units, and that was a pandemic peak for that state. Suggest the Zero Hedge summary, you can rest assured that America's Dr. Mengele has the spin cycle on high. We'll see what they come up with to lie about this one. No doubt, real soon now. But you already know, don't you? It's going to consist of blaming those who haven't been stupid enough to commit suicide by Zyklon B injection. Well, they continue to fudge the figures and crank up the terror, and of course, the mandates. One place, though, that the terror and the mandates do seem to have been having their desired effect is in the United States military, where suicides are literally breaking records and, of course, destroying the services. Says another story from Zero Hedge, new data released by the Defense Department, SICK, last week reveals military suicides have increased by a hugely alarming 15% from just last year. Army and Marine Corps leadership, SICK, including Defense Secretary, SICK, I guess that would be really, really SICK, Lloyd Austin, calls it troubling, according to the Associated Press, and it's prompted top brass to call for action und greater intervention. You know what it means, right? Poke them all, threaten them, destroy their retirement, kill them outright, and see if they won't do it themselves instead. Folks, if this doesn't disgust you, you're not paying attention. Most deaths, says the story, in the major branches occurred in the Army and Marine Corps, with 580 suicides from each of them, a number up from just 504, although that's incredibly extreme, the year before. But both Navy and Air Force suicides saw little or no change. And remember, folks, these numbers are bad enough, and they're not even counting those who commit to the assisted suicide imposed by the Biden regime on those who still think they're serving their country by playing Russian roulette with their immune system. Said Mr. Mandate himself, Lloyd Austin, reacting to the new figures, quote, listen to this, folks. Suicide rates among our service members and military families are still too high, and the trends are not going in the right direction, unquote. So let's force them to choose between their jobs and their lives and see if that might increase the stress levels just a bit more. Says the piece here, on-the-job stress is often described as a potential contributing factor to troop suicides. Gee, do you think? But perhaps more often, the strains on marriages due to military life or financial or other personal issues might have an effect. Yeah, like mandating that they take the poison poke. Some of the liars among the top brass, however, are downplaying all of this. said the aptly named Army Major General Clement Coward, acting executive director for the Force Resiliency, SIC, office. The department did not see any, quote, statistical change in suicide rates to indicate that the COVID-19 pandemic had an impact. But maybe they'll see something a little bit different now that they've decided to force people to pick suicide, well, one way or another. And for some reason, folks, this story feels compelled to tell us, as they conclude, that the most common method of committing suicide was with a gun, followed by hanging or asphyxiation. But now, your host can't help but think, death by lethal injection is certainly making a surge to the top slot. But with that on the table, this may in fact end up being good news. It comes from Paul Joseph Watson via Summit News about three of the Swiss Guards, which are the Pope's personal private troops, have resigned. And three others have been suspended after refusing to comply Achtung, Visier, Vatican mandate to take the poison poke or else. The so-called Pope's bodyguards had previously been ordered to, quote, protect their health, yeah sure, and that of the others they come into contact with as part of their service by committing Harry Carey by means of the Zyklon B poke. The mandate being part of a broader instruction to all Vatican employees to get the COVID shot or else. And the story makes one interesting observation here. The fact that there is no religious exemption against taking the poison poke within the hallowed walls of the Vatican tells you everything you need to know about the Vatican and Pope Satan, who has repeatedly amplified pro-vaccination, sick narratives, and refused to extend any understanding to Catholics who know better than to commit suicide. And this next story might almost be funny if it wasn't such a sadistic twisting of the knife. The federal bunglers of investigation have raided the headquarters in Lower Manhattan of the NYPD's Sergeants Benevolent Association, or SBA, on Tuesday morning as part of what is laughably called an ongoing investigation into them, according to the New York Daily News, citing an agency spokesliar. The 11,000-member union, the story tells us, is headed by outspoken President Ed Mullins, member of the NYPD since January 1982, who's known for his frequent criticism of political opponents, including the communist mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio. Mullins came under fire, the Daily Mail notes, when he posted the 2020 arrest report of de Blasio's daughter, Chiara de Blasio, on socialist media following her arrest during the George Floyd protests. But as John Cardillo puts it, after the FBI raid of the headquarters of the SBA, they're the only New York PD union with a conservative critical of Biden, de Blasio, and BLM at the helm. Nothing to see here. Move along, move along. And, of course, make sure you totally trust the FBI. Because have they ever lied to you? Okay, well, I stand corrected. Have they ever lied to you, done it over and over and over again, and then actually had the press come out and admit it? From there, let's go right to the economic meltdown, still in progress and even more aggressively now being covered up. And I want to introduce this with a story that I intended to start off with Wednesday, but ended up not being able to do. Why? Because there's a really nasty software company masquerading as an operating system provider called Microsoft, and that's the proper pronunciation, that occasionally decides to mandate, kind of like your vaccine pusher, that you'll have a new, improved version of their crap operating system. The technical term, folks, for that is POS, if you've ever heard it, whether you like it or not. And right after I recorded my intro for yesterday's show on the studio machine that I use here to do all my editing, Microsoft decided it was time to burn it all down. And for reasons that literally took me hours to debug, yeah, I missed the deadline, I had to literally reinstall almost all of my editing system software in order to get back where I was before they decided to force feed their update into my computer's veins. And guess what, folks? I can't help but think that there's a pattern here. And you know what? It's a lot of the very same people that are behind all of it. So here's the story that still resonates as the week comes to an end, even though, as we already knew they would, Congress caved about a trillion-dollar platinum coin that some on the far left have now decided is a really good idea. It was a conspiracy theory back when a bunch of Austrian economists who understood the biggest debt bubble in human history, the fact that it would inevitably implode, oh yeah, and the fact that the Federal Reserve, since 1913, has been aiding and abetting the process and undermining the world's monetary system to boot, actually proposed something strangely similar, but for a very, very different reason. And we'll come back to that part, but first the story, courtesy of Axios, a typical left-leaning outlet, which says a $1 trillion platinum coin could be minted, quote, within hours of the Treasury Secretary's decision to do so, said Philip Diehl, former director of the United States Mint, to Axios. And why this matters? Well, congressional solutions to the debt ceiling problem could take weeks to implement. Oh, we'll come back to that. Rhino Mitch McConnell, as expected, and no doubt partly in response to horrible pressure like this, has caved. Who could have thought it? Well, though, especially they said if the reconciliation process is used and time is running out, so be afraid, be very afraid. But in case of emergency, they said, and yes, certainly not being able to print all the money in the known universe and further torpedo the faltering fiat U.S. dollar might even be a bigger emergency than poisoning tens or hundreds of millions of people in response to a booga-booga Fauci CCP-developed bioweapon that hardly kills anybody by comparison. So the threat was, we'll just put a whole bunch more zeros on a platinum coin. We can do that really quickly. All it takes is an order from the almighty Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary. Hey, no constitutional requirement anymore. And quote, voila! We bought ourselves the equivalent of a $1 trillion increase in the debt limit without any impact on inflation. Unquote. And I'll spare you the music, folks. Says Diehl. And if you believe that, yeah, somebody's willing to do to your body what they intend to do to the economy. Here's how Axios explained it. Even if Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, has no intention of actually minting such a coin, there's no reason for her not to quietly instruct the mint director to take those steps, meaning put some more zeros on the platinum coin, a day or two in advance. And at that point, a coin could be struck literally in minutes at the West Point Mint. Even then, if it needed to be physically deposited at the New York Fed, that's only a short helicopter ride away. And how apropos. Think about it. Okay, well, you knew the rhinos would cave, didn't you? The Daily Mail puts it this way. The Senate finally reached a deal to avert financial catastrophe. Well, they kicked the can down the road until December anyway. Mitch McConnell and the evil anti-constitutional Chucky Schumer carved out a devil's deal to temporarily lift the debt limit by, I'll call it, $500 billion. I guess now that means a little less than half an ounce of special platinum, and it's expected to pass Thursday. Oh, and they had to work all night, folks, poor little boys, to sell out your future. Tyler Durden's headline for Zero Hedge is a bit more blunt. Democrats claim victory, they say, after McConnell blinks on short-term debt limit hike. So now they can tear it all down and, quote, build back better with their great reset and more socialist, communist, fascist to boot. All right, well, honestly, I could care less about the political machinations and who takes the quote-unquote blame for having once again torpedoed the United States economy and stuck another wooden stake into the heart of the Constitution, the entire concept of honest money, and literally everything that the rule of law was once put in place to prohibit. Remember, the Federal Reserve is neither federal, nor does it have any reserves. It's sure as hell not constitutional. Congress never had the power to print fiat money, much less delegate it to a totally unconstitutional public-private, but really neither partnership, like the Federal Reserve. And if it hadn't been for all the evil that inevitably sprung from that particularly disgusting 1913 misstep, we wouldn't have a debt limit, nor a need for it. Because that was never more than another end run around these prohibitions anyway. But that takes me back, more or less, to the $1 trillion coin. Because there have been constitutionalists and people who understand economics pointing out for at least several decades now that if the Congress actually had a backbone, or bothered to read their oath, there is a way out of the Federal Reserve death trap. And it's contained in the Enabling Act itself, the original contract, the Federal Reserve Act, from over a century ago. They could simply, legally, mint a coin to pay off the entire federal debt, give it over to the private banking entity known as the Federal Reserve, and call it square. After all, they actually do have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. But what do you bet the stockholders of that totally private partnership called the Federal Reserve System would squeal like stuck pigs if they got shafted out of all their purloined currency by a government and a people that had finally awakened to the evil that they've been pulling for 100 years?
Ah, you cursed rat! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Melting! Oh, what a world! What a world! Who would have thought a good little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? Ah!
Well, you know, Congress doesn't have anywhere close to the backbone required to actually undo the evil that's been fomenting for so long, much less destroy all that beautiful wickedness. It was always a conspiracy theory, don't you know, that anybody might consider minting such a coin and using it to undo the evil of the Federal Reserve. But still, isn't it ironic that when push comes to shove and the dollar is literally on the brink of total meltdown and destruction, Big Brother and his deep state swamp critters are more than willing to pull that same argument out of the hat and use the Treasury Secretary to do it by fiat when it comes to saving the Federal Reserve, at least for another couple of months, from the inevitable. Oh yeah, it's all coming apart, but there's a great reset to be considered, and you know exactly, if you've been paying attention, what will rise like a phoenix from the ashes of what they've had planned for so long. And the fact that it was a conspiracy theory, back when it could have been used to do good, but is now just another cudgel to be deployed against those who might, somewhere deep down inside there, still think about developing a backbone, tells you just how far down that toilet bowl we've already spun. Next, let's throw a few more logs on the Meltdown Update fire, starting with this piece, courtesy of Zero Hedge, via Greg Miller of Freight Waves, about dry bulk shipping rates, which have now hit $80,000 per day. That's a long-term record, as buyers worldwide are scrambling for coal, but especially in China, where Chinese factory blackouts due to electricity rationing and dwindling coal supplies have hit both China and India. Yet another sign of stress, it says, for energy supplies and global supply chains. Who could have thought it? Answer, anybody who's been paying attention. Spot rates for large dry cargo ships just topped $80,000 per day for the first time since 2009, during the early years of the Obama regime, and freight derivatives for the fourth quarter, a period when rates for these vessels normally pull back, have just spiked. Not long ago, it was a different story, they note, because on September 20th, headlines were dominated by Chinese property developer Evergrande and its impending collapse, still in progress. Fallout to construction and steel demand would assuredly, and assumedly, hit future Chinese buying of commodities carried on dry cargo vessels. And contract rates tanked all the way down to just under $30,000 per day as the market signaled party over. But now, it's not. Festivities shall continue, thank you, almighty Fed and congressional whores, until year end. And this is interesting and certainly supports the war hypothesis, as with container shipping, the piece concludes, rampant port congestion is slashing effective ship supply, adding more support to higher rates. Braemar ACM Shipbroking estimates that 5.7% of the entire global dry bulk fleet is now waiting offshore of China. And let's not forget the virtual Chinese embargo of shipping to the desperately deprived United States, where the CCP's man in California is helping them to make sure that the offshore parking lot around the ports of Los Angeles continues to set records. And I mentioned this story, but let's not gloss over it. Since the crisis in China's housing market began to explode as Evergrande's massive Ponzi scheme pileup started to plunge, says another piece from Zero Hedge, following China's tech crackdown that smashed Chinese tech firms lower and China's education system crackdown, which pummeled Chinese education stocks, the expected contagion has apparently, so far anyway, been modest at worst, and Washington's politerati have been quiet on the issues over there. However, notes Tyler Durden, the last couple of weeks have seen the Teflon market, even in the United States, start to shake a bit, which may help explain why Secretary of State, sick, Antony Blinken, has suddenly decided to chime in and demand that China, get this and consider the source, act responsibly in how they address, and you can read that as bail out, the potential impact of an Evergrande default crisis and its impact on the world derivative and fiat debt bubble. Quote, China has to make sovereign economic decisions for itself. Oh, and here your host has to insert, oh yeah, and for us too, since our puppet is beholden to them. But we also know that what China does economically is going to have profound ramifications, profound effects on literally the entire world, because all of our economies are so intertwined, he said on Wednesday in an interview with Bloomberg Television in Paris. And I like Tyler Durden's translation here. In other words, fix it before things blow up all the good work and our beautiful wickedness that we've done by puking trillions of dollars of newly printed fiat money into the markets. And ironically, they say, this demand is coming as U.S. political chaos escalates. So we look forward to Beijing demanding, they'll probably do so directly to their puppet, that Washington act responsibly in dealing with the United States' sovereign risk. And let's not forget, folks, if they really decide they need to cover it up, there's always the war that they've been working so hard to set the stage for. And one way or another, we'll pick it up on that war front after the bottom of the hour break. Stay with us. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening, folks, and we'll continue our look back at the week. I'm your host, Mark Call. And now that we've followed the money and looked at the economic meltdown starting earlier in the week, let's talk about the Great Reset's other big goal, which is, of course, outright tyranny and total control. And what better example of just how dumbed down and, yes, slave-conditioned formerly free America has gotten than this story that we'll start off with today. There's a Waystream News version full of spin, a zero-head summary, and some local coverage, courtesy of CBS News Channel 4, that all pretty well flesh out the details. A hospital, sick, called UC Health, and I guess I really need to say sick after that, ironically. It's a system headquartered in Aurora, Colorado, just outside the People's Republic of Denver, has adopted new transplant rules. And basically what they say is, you N-words aren't allowed here. Think I'm kidding, folks? Well, remember, the new N-word are those who actually have half a brain and don't want to commit voluntary Zyklon B-induced suicide. It's not enough that Big Brother and his sycophants are saying, you can't eat at a restaurant, you N-word you, if you haven't taken the poison poke, and we're not even going to allow you to ride in the back of the bus, much less fly, you worthless N-words you, and don't even think about being allowed out in public with the Uber mention. This is the latest discrimination story, says Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge, and it's downright terrifying. A Colorado woman with stage 5 kidney failure is scrambling to find a new hospital, a real one, your host would say, because she and her friend, who has volunteered to donate a kidney to her, are both unvaxxed. One because she can read scripture, the other because she knows better and already has natural immunity to the booga-booga flu by having had it. And the hospital has given them 30 days to cave in, take the poison poke, or be taken off the transplant list. Now remember, folks, she's not waiting for a donor. She has one. No, there's no Ubermensch out there who deserves the kidney more than her because she's not, you know, one of those people. This is just punishment because we don't let your kind in here. The woman who needs the kidney to save her life actually even offered to sign a waiver. And once upon a time, back when we had something called, what was it? Oh yeah, the Nuremberg Protocols. That would have been more than sufficient. But now it seems, if you're one of those people, the new medical oath is, first, do as much harm as you can. Back in August, before the so-called hospital went completely Nazi, UC Health told the Colorado Springs woman, Leilani Lutali, that submitting to DNA-altering gene therapy wouldn't be a requirement to have the surgery. Quote, at the end of August, they confirmed that there was no COVID shot needed at that time, she said. Fast forward to September 28th. That's when I found out that they have this policy around the COVID shot for both the donor and the recipient. And that's when the woman that they now want dead received the following letter. Dear Leilani, it said, the transplant team at University of Colorado Hospital has determined that it is necessary to place you inactive on the waiting list. Why? You haven't taken the Zyklon B not vaccine. Translated, folks, that means stay home and die. Unless you decide to be a good little slave and follow orders. You have 30 days, Achtung, to begin the vaccination series. And if your decision is to refuse COVID vaccination, sick, you will be removed from the kidney transplant list. And we don't give a blankety blank whether you have a volunteer donor or not. If you have questions or concerns, you little peon slave, you, please call us, and we'll tell you, go to hell, you N-word, you. Said her donor friend, quote, it's your choice on what treatment you have. Well, folks, it used to be, back when we were a free country, and the new N-words weren't realizing they really aren't human anymore, so far as Big Brother's concerned. Anyway, she said in Leilani's case, the choice has been taken away from her. Her life has now been held hostage because of this mandate, unquote. And just wait, folks, they intend to do it to all of the new slaves. From there, I really do have to at least briefly go to this piece from the disreputable, disgusting, lying WAPO, and it was a link that was included in their twisted coverage of this story, about how, and here I will quote, a Colorado-based health system says it's denying organ transplants to patients not vaccinated against the coronavirus in, quote, almost all situations, citing studies.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
To show that these patients are much more likely to die if they get COVID-19. And this way beyond disgusting bit of propaganda that has almost certainly already cost more people their lives, and I can relate to that firsthand, folks, reveals just how truly satanic they really are. What is ivermectin? They ask the dumbed-down idiots who read their paper and might actually believe this tripe. And how did people get the idea it can treat COVID? Answer? Well, it's called peer-reviewed data, you blithering idiots and scumbags, and it's part of actual, as opposed to government-approved and bogus, science. Think, for example, about tens of millions of people in India who took ivermectin and are alive today to talk about it, and that constitutes a far better clinical test than what they're running on live guinea pigs today and lying about. Anyway, back to the story here. They admit up front they lied about the dosages first time around, claiming their bogus numbers just might lead to toxicity. And here's the money paragraph in this bit of crap. Pun intended, citing the infamous post from the U.S. Federal Death Administration and their Instagram feed back in August with the idiotic caption under what the WAPO calls an idyllic photo of a chestnut horse, quote, you are not a horse. Stop it with the pound sign ivermectin. It's not authorized for treating hashtag COVID. Well, that post, says the WAPO, was one of several stark warnings issued about ivermectin, an anti-parasitic medication being promoted by prominent conservative media figures. I guess you're conservative nowadays if you merely want to live, much less be free. Ut politicians, as well as some physicians, they actually admit, as an effective treatment for COVID-19. Despite, they lie through their damnable teeth, despite the lack of scientific evidence showing there are benefits of taking the drug for that purpose. Now, I'm going to pause here, folks, and take a deep breath. Because as you can tell, this type of attempted genocide by falsehood really does tend to fire me up a bit. Perfidy, lies, and outright whoppers have always tended to upset me, at least a bit, but this goes way beyond that. It's not only intended to cause mass deaths, it's intended to completely destroy what's left of a once free country in the process. And if there is a hell, folks, people who commit this kind of atrocity certainly deserve to burn there. So, with that out of the way, back we go to this bit of nothing less than satanic propaganda. The quote continues, interest in ivermectin has surged during the summer's rapid rise in coronavirus infections fueled by the highly transmissible, and they don't say it, but I will, and highly vaccine-related, to put it mildly, Delta variant. Prescriptions for ivermectin have soared, and some people have resorted to taking the forms of the anti-parasitic, and they keep calling it that, even though that's not what it is, folks. Intended for large animals. Oh, and a quick aside here. Isn't it ironic how in other contexts, that's exactly what they want to teach your kids that they are, and nothing more? But back to the whopper. Leading to spikes, and here comes a great big stinking whopping lie, in calls to poison control centers around the country. Well, maybe people are calling poison control centers because of the hysteria introduced by idiotic propaganda like this. But they're not done. They even try to get people to fall for really stupid leading questions, like, what is ivermectin and how is it traditionally used? You know they're going to lie about that. Does ivermectin have an effect on COVID-19? Yeah, they lie about that, because actual studies show that it's far better than destroying your immune system while simultaneously subjecting your heart, lungs, and cardiovascular system to the stroke, poke, and clot shot. So how did people get the idea that it can treat COVID? Answer? We've already talked about that. And here's the important one. Well, how are doctors and health agencies responding? And you know the answer to that. Totalitarian mandates, lies, and outright force. And as I was reading this, folks, I couldn't help but hearken back to a drug called remdesivir, which isn't even remotely as effective as ivermectin has proven to be. And would you like to bet your life that probably includes even the horse, cow, and goat versions? But unlike remdesivir, especially used as directed, it doesn't destroy your liver and kidneys either. And back in November, folks, even the WHO issued a conditional recommendation against the use of remdesivir, which they're using widely now in hospitalized patients, regardless of disease severity, they say, as, quote, there is currently no evidence that remdesivir improves survival and other outcomes in these patients, unquote. So they unleashed the WAPO and criminally negligent news network propaganda against ivermectin instead. I'll say it again. These people, and that includes the so-called doctors that are prescribing crap, in lieu of any of a number of things that are demonstrably very effective and don't have the side effects, care more about destroying people's bodies and killing them than they do the truth. This is just plain evil, pure and simple. So let's go here next. No doubt about it, folks, this falls into the ugly category. Courtesy of Zero Hedge and via the Epoch Times and Ivan Penchikoff, one day after a North Carolina school board dared to adopt a policy that would discipline or dismiss teachers if they incorporated the sham called critical race theory, or CRT, into their teaching, their indoctrination of the history of the United States, the so-called Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, what a sad excuse for a human being, on October 4th announced a concentrated effort to target any alleged threats of violence, intimidation, or harassment by parents towards school personnel. And if you understand what that means, folks, how dare you even so much as criticize one of them for doing evil to your child? Yeah, that's intimidation, because they're afraid you might take away their jobs. And that's, in fact, how they intimidate and harass you. The announcement also comes just days after a National Association of School Boards, says the piece, asked the Biden regime to take what they called extraordinary measures to prevent alleged threats against school staff that the association said was coming from parents who don't like their little children being abused by mask mandates and the teaching of critical race theory in the indoctrination centers. Garland, though, directed the FBI and U.S. attorneys over the next 30 days to convene meetings with federal, state, and local leaders within 30 days to, quote, facilitate the discussion of strategies for addressing these alleged threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. According to the letter, and they attached the PDF, that the disgusting so-called attorney general sent on Monday to all U.S. attorneys, the current whoremeister at the head of the FBI, Christopher Wraith, and the director of the Executive Office of U.S. Attorneys, not to mention the assistant attorney general of the criminal division of the Department of Just Us. But wait a minute. And here some of us probably thought that the criminal division encompassed the entirety of that now sadly misnamed edifice. The story goes on to say that these criminals are now saying further efforts will be rolled out over coming days, including a task force that will determine, Achtung, how to use federal resources to prosecute offending parents who still think they ought to have some say in what's being done to their children, as well as how to advise state entities on prosecutions in cases where actually no law is broken. And the Just Us Department will provide training to school staff on how to report threats from parents and preserve evidence that they might use in investigation and prosecution of those parents who still have the hubris to think they don't want their little children destroyed. Said the reprobate, now ruling over what was once called justice in these formerly free United States, quote, while spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, well, at least it once was, folks, that protection, he said, does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. Now, we alone are allowed to do that, and we alone will tell you what constitutes intimidation when we do it to you and you're not allowed to do it to us. Now, let's be real clear on this, folks. It constitutes intimidation to threaten their jobs and to say that if you don't straighten up and fly right, we're going to send you back where you came from, take away your job and your cushy pension, and you'll be out on your ear. Uh-oh. No, you're not allowed to say that, you see. Only they can threaten you with your job. They don't even need a constitutional authority to do so. But if you don't take the poison poke, for just one example, or if you think that your kids are actually yours, woo, Katie, bar the door. You're going to see intimidation, and you can rest assured on that score. Wrote Christopher S. Rufo, the Biden regime is, quote, rapidly repurposing federal law enforcement to target political opposition, Have we ever seen that before in history, folks? They want to reclassify dissent, he noted, as disinformation and domestic terrorism, justifying an unprecedented intervention both directly and in partnership with the socialist big tech public-private partner companies. And Rufo goes on to note that neither the Attorney General's memo nor the full Department of Just Us press release cites any significant actual credible threat. This, he said, is a blatant suppression tactic designed to dissuade citizens from participating in the democratic process at school boards, unquote. Now, at this point, I think it's important to put in a little aside here, because later on in the week, by Thursday, the Daily Mail was pointing out that there just might be a little conflict of interest here with the scumbag masquerading as Attorney General reveals, says their headline, A.G. Garland's daughter is married to the founder of a so-called education group, yeah, sure, promoting critical race theory. Parents accuse the Biden regime of conflict of interest as the DOJ ramps up the so-called investigation into parents. Turns out that Garland's daughter, Rebecca, married a fellow named Zan Tanner, the co-founder of Panorama Education back in 2018. They are a public-private partner in many of the far-left big cesspool cities across the country, providing data and feedback on the little kitties, including surveys that gauge the students' emotional and mental well-being, well, at least when it comes to how they feel about their sexuality and whether they've been properly transgendered and conditioned or not. Says the story, Attorney General Garland's daughter, Rebecca, is married to the co-founder of Panorama Education, a group that's big into critical race theory teachings and has contacts with school boards across the country. And get this. Two Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg is a prominent financial backer of the group to boot. At about the same time as well, Congressional Representative from Colorado Lauren Boebert weighed in, writing a letter to the, this is the only mistake I saw in the whole thing here, Honorable Merrick Garland, Attorney General, where she said, I'm alarmed by your decision to weaponize the Department of Just Us against concerned parents exercising their First Amendment rights who dare to oppose the teaching of critical race theory, a repulsive and racist ideology, in their children's schools. This policy change, she said, appears to be in response to a letter from the National School Board Association that claimed American public schools are under threat, she properly puts it in quotes, from law-abiding parents and compared some of their actions to a form of, quote, domestic terrorism. Parents, she said correctly, have absolutely every right to express their opinions at public school board meetings concerning their children's education. And the DOJ's October 4, 2021 press release indicated your office was in possession of new data concerning, quote, an increase in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school board members, teachers, and workers in our nation's public schools. Well, she said, quote, I ask you to provide my office a copy of that information by November 1, 2021, and all the data from previous years that can corroborate your claims. Basically, she said, put up or shut up. And all of this, folks, causes your host to hearken back to the last time I was called in for jury duty. Now, obviously, given what I know about how trial by jury was supposed to work back when we had such a thing in these formerly free United States, the judge didn't want me anywhere close to the jury, and I was eventually sent home. At least once people had had long enough to forget why. But I did at least get a chance to speak up a bit. Nevertheless, one of the things that absolutely stunned me was how they were selecting jurors, and of course telling them that you will judge the facts only and the law as I give it to you, and if you have any inclination as to what free speech amounts to, and why Colorado's new blatantly unconstitutional law against what they called intimidation of public officials was such an abomination to the First and Fourth Amendments. Or the fact that the public servants are supposed to work for you, we don't want you anywhere close to this jury. In that case, folks, the case consisted of a man who had the hubris to approach a judge when he ran into her on the street in Alamosa County, and evidently, although we were never allowed to actually hear the evidence, of course, suggested she'd better start paying attention to the Constitution and do her job, or he would work to make sure she didn't have a job. And that, literally, constituted a felony threat, so far as the trial that some people were going to sit on was concerned. This is not new, folks. It's just that now they're pulling out all the stops. And you're not even being allowed to talk back to the people who intend to do what they intend to do to you without so much as you being allowed to make a peep in the process. Wear your face diaper and shut up. The story goes on to cite incident after incident where parents have led the charge against what are now called controversial issues. Once they'd have been called child abuse, things like critical race theory, mandatory masks in school, and poison pokes. Whether the parents like it, worry that it makes their children infertile forever, or just outright kills them, or not. In Loudoun County, Virginia, for example, two parents were arrested in June for trespassing while protesting CRT and a transgender policy at the school district because they refused to leave a meeting that was later declared an unlawful assembly. Noting that parents are now speaking out about things being done to their children, Senator Tom Cotton tweeted that the Biden regime is now, quote, cracking down on dissent. And just this week, former presidential candidate and congressman from Texas, Dr. Ron Paul, explained why it's important for parents to control the education of what are actually, yeah, their children. Quote, during last week's Virginia gubernatorial debate, Democrat candidate Terry McAuliffe promised that as governor, he would prevent parents from removing sexually explicit books from school libraries because he doesn't think that, quote, parents should be telling schools what they should teach, unquote. Continued Dr. Paul, McAuliffe's disdain for parents who think they should have some say in their children's education, sick, is shared by most so-called progressives, as well as some who even call themselves conservatives. They think parents should obediently pay the taxes to fund Big Brother's indoctrination centers, aka the public schools, and never question any aspect of the government school program. The refusal of school officials, he continued, to obey the wishes of parents extends to the anti-science mask mandates, which are not only useless in protecting children from a virus that they're at low risk of becoming sick from to begin with, much less transmitting. The mandated mask wearing, he said, actually makes children sick. Yet, administrators refuse to follow the science if that means listening to parents instead of those who are declared by similar leftists to be experts. And replacing parental control with governmental control of education and all other aspects of child raising, says Dr. Paul, has been a goal of authoritarians ever since Plato. After all, it's much easier to ensure obedience if someone's been raised to think of the government as the source of all wisdom, truth, and power, as well as the provider of all life's necessities. All of those, he concludes, who believe in liberty should consider restoring parental control of education a top priority. And your host, of course, for years now has suggested that the only right answer, given what's been done to the indoctrination system, is get them out, get them out, get them out. Because now they intend to criminalize even the attempt to hold them responsible for the evil they're doing. And I guess before we run out of time today, we really ought to do this story. Not only, though, is it not among the good, the bad, and the ugly, it's not even among the remotely surprising, but at least it's worth noting. The New American reports that mask mandates correlate with greater spread of COVID and associated death. Hey, folks, who could have thought it? Although your host has been suggesting this all along. It's pretty easy to verify with a pulse oximeter. Anytime you can see that your oxygenation is going down and your blood carbon dioxide level is going up as a result of restricting your own breathing, which you can observe immediately with your own eyes, anybody with half a brain knows that something is wrong. But as the New American says, perhaps a clue now is that politicians who institute mask mandates are shown repeatedly to not be too fond of actually wearing the masks themselves. Whether they know better or whether they just believe they are better, the reality is the following. At best, mask mandates do nothing to reduce the societal level spread of the booga 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 communist Chinese flu. But at worst, they lead to far greater COVID-19 transmission and, of course, death. The latter case in point is Oregon, where a month ago, the socialist Democrat Governor Kate Brown instituted another totalitarian mask mandate. And as the National Review reported, on August 24, everyone 5 years old or older, regardless of vaccination status, was forced to wear a mask, a face covering, or a face shield in outdoor spaces if they are less than 6 feet apart from other individuals not in their household. Said the lying totalitarian governor, masks are a quick and simple tool, yeah, a stupid tool for the blind, that we can use immediately to protect ourselves and our families and quickly help stop further spread of COVID-19.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
What a bald-faced, unmitigated lie. And on August 24th, when the idiotic mandate was issued, Oregon had just shy of 50,000 active cases of COVID-1984. But as of September 21st, Oregon then had 86,623 active cases, an increase of 73% from the day the governor announced the idiotic outdoor mask requirement. Now, I know what you're thinking. Yeah, the tests are bogus, and you really can't tell much from the case levels anyway. And certainly, during this same time frame, there were a whole lot of people that are now falling victim to taking the Zyklon B poke. So there are confounding effects here. But the bottom line here is that it's stupidity that's at the root of all of them. But as I've said for quite a while here, stupid alone isn't enough to explain what we're seeing. This is downright evil, folks, to commit mass murder in the face of so much evidence of what it's doing. But the one thing by now that's beyond obvious is that they intend to keep on lying to you until they either subject you to their totalitarian regime completely or outright kill you. So the right answer is what it's always been, folks. Withdraw your consent totally and your physical body from a system that's no longer even trying to hide it. They really do intend to kill you.